one show gives you the information that can change and shape your life. The IMA Doctors. Get straight talk and honest answers to your healthcare questions from the team of doctors at IMA Healthcare.
IMA Healthcare is focused on whole person preventative and specialized medical care. Instead of simply treating a symptom, they'll work to find the source of that symptom and what it means to your overall health. Today on the IMA Doctor Show, we have Dr. Brent Hella and Susan Hansen from IMA Healthcare in the studio with us. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
It's been a while, Dr. Hella.
It's been a while, yep.
Well, welcome back to the studio.
Yep.
I appreciate having you in today because we are going to talk all things diabetes, all right? Dr. Hella is an internal medicine physician who specializes in disease management with a special interest in diabetes and weight loss. Susan Hansen is a physician's assistant who specializes in women's health and prevention of diseases, including a special interest in diabetes education. So, Dr. Hella, you're telling me just before we went on air, it is the 100th anniversary of insulin.
Right. That's incredible that it's only been 100 years that we've had insulin available. Before that, you know, type 1 diabetes was a fatal disease. Until Banting and Best in Canada came up with this notion that insulin was at the root of the problem with type 1 diabetics, people with diabetes would die. And it was quite sad. So we picked this not knowing that it was 100 year, but it was kind of cool. And in fact, we're a week out from their first clinical trial with a dog named Marjorie, who lasted 70 days with, they removed the pancreas of Marjorie, and she lived 70 days with their newly discovered insulin. And ironically then died of an infection from having the pancreas removed, but you know. And then within a month, so in December, had gotten a biochemist to come purify it. By January of, so January of, night was at 1922, had a 14-year-old boy who was dying of diabetes, basically cured with their new found insulin.
So this was an overnight medical miracle.
I mean, how rapid it went from, hey, let's do this, to developing it was incredible.
Now, I think one important part of talking about this story is these doctors didn't sell this. They didn't become multimillionaires overnight because of it. They wanted everyone to be able to have access to this. And the irony is that in today's day and age, it is one of the most expensive medications to keep people alive.
Well, it's one of the most expensive medications that oftentimes come out of pocket for patients. And like we talked about before the show, they got $1 for their insulin patent.
$1
they gave to Eli Lilly, the patent for insulin. They said, we can't hold this back and make money on it. This needs to go out now. And so they gave it to Eli Lilly.
Okay. Well, let's get deep into diabetes. We encourage you to call, text, email any questions you might have for these two. I've heard that diabetes is a major cause of blindness, kidney failure, heart attack, stroke, lower limb amputation. There seems to be a lot associated with diabetes that is beyond just regulating the sugars in your blood.
Absolutely. You know, our goal for both of us is we would like to never see another diabetic come into our clinic. Obviously, that's not going to happen. But if we can start catching these things earlier, we can prevent the blindness, we can prevent limb loss, and you know, the actual number one reason diabetics die is usually cardiovascular reasons.
Let me ask you a question, Susan. How often is it that someone is not taking care of their diabetes? So they have a diagnosis, but they've just chosen to either ration their insulin or not really take it seriously?
Yeah, something that I see and hear every week in my clinic, unfortunately, you know, the patients that can't afford their medications, whether it's insulin or oral medications, we have patients who try to get by and ration things out. And then, unfortunately, we end up with high sugars, hospitalizations, ER visits. It goes on and on.
It's just amazing. And can we talk about the difference between type 1 and type 2 diabetes and maybe give some education to the people out there who don't know about it?
So type 1 is what Dr. Hella was alluding to earlier, where they don't have any pancreas function and they rely on insulin in order to survive. Type 2 is generally an issue related to insulin resistance. So most of them are still making some insulin. It's just not used effectively. So that means we have to use medications. We try to encourage dietary changes with them and lifestyle things such as exercise. So those are the main differences. But there's lots of different types of diabetes out there.
What about how I get diabetes? It's not something you catch, right? It's not that I shared a soda pop with somebody and now all of a sudden I've caught diabetes.
Correct. You know, type 1 is an autoimmune issue. So we've destroyed the beta cells within the pancreas. So they are not functioning anymore. So that's why they end up needing the insulin. Type 2 is generally caused from what we have been doing in a family history. There's a 90% chance of getting it if you have a family history for it. So obesity is the number one leading cause of that.
So if I'm to understand, I think a lot of times we think, oh, well, you just didn't eat well and treat your body well. But type 1 is you have it in your genetics, correct? Mm-hmm. And then type 2 is part genetics, part lifestyle.
And type 1 is generally there's something that ended up destroying your pancreas. So, you know, there's less of a genetic component to it, although we do see it in families, often skipping a generation. But we do see those antibodies kind of stick around for them.
Is diabetes becoming an epidemic?
I think it's already an epidemic.
Agreed.
I mean, the problem ends up being that most patients with diabetes or prediabetes don't know they have it. So that's where we try to come up and, identify people early, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, some of the tools that we use. But getting people in earlier to think about weight loss, think about their health and what they're eating and putting in their bodies in a little different way is kind of like what we like to do, kind of catching things early.
You know, I'm going to share a personal story here. My wife at 35 was diagnosed as a type 1 diabetic. And she wasn't feeling well, and we went into the walk-in, and they, of course, you know, could have been a million different things. And when we finally sat down with the doctor, he goes, well, first of all, you're diabetic. And we both were just shocked of like, what? How all of a sudden did she become diabetic? And, you know, Jill's an active person, and she eats well. I don't know someone who eats out of the garden more than Jill. It drastically changed both of our lives. That very night, like I remember they sent us home with insulin and a glucose monitor, and they're like, yeah, okay, good news. You're going to like start to live life differently from this moment on. And it really, my eyes were really shut to what goes on with diabetics and also how many diabetics are out there. And there's support groups that are amazing, but it can be just a daunting diagnosis. And parents who have younger kids who have diabetes, I can't imagine. So let's talk about, can you avoid or delay diabetes with diet, physical activity? You know, you mentioned the word pre-diabetes in there.
Well, I think, as a type 2 diabetic, there are certain things, lifestyle changes that you can do to help delay the onset. There's medications like metformin. There's just changes in diet and exercise. Type 1, I think if you're, you know, genetically predisposed to diabetes, your risk of developing type 1 diabetes for whatever reason, whatever may have triggered it. Now, the type 1 diabetes right now is high because of COVID. So the infection has spurred on a new kind of, you know, a new number of diabetics because this virus stimulates the antibodies to destroy the pancreas. So we're seeing a higher incidence of type 1 diabetes. So as a type 1 diabetic, and I think Susan had been in contact with some University of Minnesota people about maybe putting people on like anti-cancer rejection medications to try to prevent people who are predisposed to having type 1 diabetes from getting it. I think that's early mm-hmm. in research. But as a type 2, definitely there's some lifestyle changes that can be made.
We've got some texts in already at 35270. And by the way, you can contact the studio if you have questions at 701-237-5948, 1-800-880-5346, or text in to that 35270. What does it mean diabetes skips a generation is a question.
Often if a parent has it, the chances that their child will have it is usually, you know, smaller compared to maybe a grandchild developing it. So, but do I see siblings have it and parents have it? Absolutely. But a lot of times, you know, with the less risk compared to type 2, that's what we see.
Another question here is, why do people with type 1 diabetes that lose a lower limb often don't live another 5 years? So that's kind of an anecdotal question.
Well, I mean, statistically speaking, that usually means that your diabetes probably wasn't very well controlled. So other factors are going to be in play, like Susan said earlier, like coronary disease. Because usually by the time that happens, there are probably other processes. Maybe the kidneys aren't working so well that are occurring. And maybe that patient isn't taking real great care of themselves too. So I've never heard that statistic. It wouldn't surprise me at all, though.
I mean, am I correct in assuming that in the last 20 years, let's say, we've drastically changed the way people live on a day-to-day basis with diabetes?
Definitely. I mean, I think we've taken better care of them, not just with medications that treat diabetes, but also medications that go along with the diabetes, like blood pressure medications, cholesterol medications. We're better at, you know, decreasing the other risks that go along with diabetes in the last 15, 20 years.
We have a lot of great new tools that we can use to help patients kind of manage and see what's going on with them.
Okay. What about gestational diabetes?
Yep. Gestational diabetes is, we don't see it a lot because we don't see pregnant women in our clinic, but certainly it does, the incidence that has gone up. Obesity definitely plays a role in it. And then if you are a gestational diabetic, your risk of having type 2 diabetes by the age of, I think, 55 is about 50%. So say you're a 25-year-old individual who has gestational diabetes, life factors, weight, you know, various things, by the time you're 55, you have about a 50% chance of developing type 2 diabetes.
Oh, wow.
So it's sometimes a pre-show of what can happen. So identifying these women early, and you can also have gestational diabetes and not know it. When we talked about that earlier, you can, quote, you know, pass your glucose challenge when you're pregnant and still give birth to a 9-10 pound kid and go, I wonder if that person had diabetes during pregnancies, and they kind of passed the test. And then we see them 20, 30 years later, and now they're struggling with weight and they're pre-diabetic. And so, yeah.
So clearly this is something that, I mean, it changes your life and the way that you think about your lifestyle a bit after that. What about like a gastric bypass in the world of diabetes?
I think that the role of gastric bypass in diabetes is evolving. The patients I see benefit most from them are type 2 diabetics who are requiring so much insulin to manage their diabetes, or they've gained so much weight and then now are on insulin. Those, to me, are the ones that benefit most from gastric bypass. You know, like, we've tried everything in our, you know, wheelhouse of medications to try to get somebody to lose weight or control their diabetes, and we just can't get it. The statistics are that most patients are off insulin if you're a type 2 diabetic within about 6 weeks of having gastric bypass.
6 weeks?
Yes. Even outside of weight loss, it just does something to you hormonally inside of your guts, changing this whole dynamic that's going on, that patients oftentimes will get off insulin very quickly. It's kind of fun.
You're listening to the IMA Doctor Show during It Takes Two with Amy and JJ. Dr. Brent Hella is with us, an internal medicine physician who specializes in disease management with a special interest in diabetes and weight loss, as well as Susan Hansen, a physician assistant who specializes in women's health and prevention of diseases, including a special interest in diabetes education. If you want to call into the show, ask a question, or you've got a comment, 701-237-5948. You can also text in to 35270. Right here on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 FM, KFGO. You're listening to the IMA Doctor Show. Dr. Brent Hella and Susan Hansen with us until 1:30 today. Let's talk about this real quick. So, continuous glucose monitoring. This is a big game changer, right?
It is. It's a huge game changer for me because I also do a lot of type 1s in my clinic and, you know, who are on insulin pumps, and it kind of morphed into an even bigger thing with, you know, they have professional monitors that we can hook up with patients and basically get the same benefit. So we can see what they're doing. They can see it on their, you know, Apple devices or watches and watch their sugars. So it has changed how we not just treat diabetics, but pre-diabetics, patients who are at risk, people who we think are having hyper or hypoglycemic events. And it's been a game changer.
I mean, the more data that you can have, the better the decision can be made, right?
Absolutely.
So this is a huge, huge thing. I know my wife uses the Dexcom system, and it changed our world. Completely, it changed our world, because now I also get alerts to my phone. So if she's in a low, so I can't imagine what this is like for a parent.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yep. The young kids, the pediatrics, their parents have it. Sometimes who's ever the nurse they can share that information with. We have it at our office where they share it with me. So they don't have to come in to upload their device. They just tell me, hey, they email me, things aren't going well. What do you think?
It's a lot easier than reading the handwritten diary too, right? That I'm sure you guys have seen for decades at this point.
Which is really just a snapshot.
Right.
You know, that at 2 o'clock today, that was your blood sugar. Well, 2 hours earlier, that Mountain Dew and cheeseburger you had was probably the problem. So
the IMA Doctor Show right here on It Takes Two with Amy and JJ. We have Dr. Brent Hella and Susan Hansen from IMA Healthcare with us until 1:30 today. If you have a comment, Holly, I see you on the line. We're going to get to you just after a quick news and weather break here on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 FM KFGO. If you are looking for IMA Healthcare online, you're going to go to imahealthcare.com. You can also call them at 701-280-2033. They're located on 45th Street and 32nd Avenue across from the Mexican Village. It's the IMA Doctor Show on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 FM KFGO. Dr. Brent Hella and Susan Hansen from IMA Healthcare in here. We're talking all things diabetes. We've all heard about immune compromised people and the worries when it comes to COVID-19. Certainly a diabetic needs to be more concerned than someone without diabetes. Am I correct there?
Yes, definitely. Yep. And it bugs me a little bit that I think, you know, offhand people go, well, this really is an illness of old people and fat people. Well, okay. When, you know, 2/3 of the country is overweight or obese and another 100 million are struggling with diabetes, you know, we're all kind of in the same boat together. The problem ends up being with as a diabetic, your rates of hospitalization, you're 3 times more likely to die. If you get hospitalized and you're diabetic with COVID, you have a 30% chance of going to the ICU. Only 1/4 of diabetics make it out of the ICU once they're there with COVID. So it's a scary, you know, the two of them together are a very scary combination.
Yeah, those are some very, very frightening statistics.
Right, right.
And then when it comes down to it, I think it's just that there's that additional care aspect too, right? Diabetics are constantly caring for themselves and constantly monitoring and giving themselves insulin. And so it's just one more thing I think that they worry about when it comes to COVID-19 is that I need to make sure to protect myself. Now, when it comes to the vaccinations, any worry at all with vaccinations and diabetic patients?
I've had no negative consequences that I've seen. And patients are a little angry at when they get the sore arm. And myself, the second Moderna shot, I got achy and didn't feel great the next day. But our diabetics are very happy that they got their vaccine.
It's a small price to pay, right?
Yep. And I tell my patients too, look, metformin's been shown to actually be, it's another diabetic medication, it's actually been shown to decrease your risk of COVID and also decrease the severity of COVID once you get it. So I encourage my diabetics throughout the COVID pandemic to continue with their metformin.
Oh, that's very interesting. So if you're on metformin, you just continue on. There's no worries.
Right, right.
Okay. Can we talk a little bit about treatment and management of pre-diabetes and being overweight? So overweight, obesity is something that as a nation we really are dealing with on a day-to-day basis. What about pre-diabetes and being overweight? You know, if someone is 30 pounds overweight, should they automatically assume that they're pre-diabetic?
Well, I mean, I think there are red flags you go into your annual exam and your blood sugar is 105 or 110, which isn't really diabetic, but getting pre-diabetic. If you're somebody who thinks there has low blood sugars when they don't eat or are starting to develop skin tags in the neck and armpit, I'm always amazed how many patients came and go, oh yeah, I've had skin tags for 10 years. What does that mean? So educating them a little bit about oftentimes those skin tags that develop in the neck and armpit can develop 10, 15 years before the onset of diabetes. So let's address it now instead of having this conversation in 15 years when, oh, by the way, now your blood sugar of 110 is now 130. You know, now we've lost 10 years. So that's where we're trying to identify people at a younger and a earlier stage of type, especially type 2 diabetes, and catching them and really talking about diet and exercise and meds.
Here's a diabetic myth that I bet we can dispel. It's just about sugar, right? So it's just stop eating candy and drinking, you know, sugary sodas. That's all it is, right?
Well, I wish that were true.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think people have a misconception of what a carb is and what it can do. And like we were talking earlier, you know, a carb is a carb, but they often act differently within your system. So you might do okay with, you know, 12 ounces of Mountain Dew, but your friend next to you, not. So, you know, what you eat and how you eat it is a huge part of it. And I would assume you as well, Dr. Hella, but we spend a lot of our day discussing diet and what you're eating and when you're eating it and when you're getting your exercise in, and it all works together.
You know, we're about to embark on the biggest eating holiday of the year for Americans. I imagine that for a diabetic, looking at a plate is pretty, I guess it's pretty terrifying to think about trying to count the amount of carbs that could be on a Thanksgiving plate.
Right. I mean, I think you just need to look at, you know, protein, veggies, and then look at the carbs and sugars that go along and just sort of try to separate the two and just try to make more healthy decisions, more proteins, and try to, you know, the potatoes and some of the breads and pastas and like that, you know, try to lay low on a little bit of those and try to do more veggies. I also tell people, you know, before you go out to your Thanksgiving feast, why don't you have an apple on your way there or have something in your gut. But so by the time you've reached there, you kind of feel maybe a little bit full. So you don't tend to overeat once you arrive.
Is there a big difference to a diabetic between like the natural sugars in an apple versus the sugars that might be in a soft drink or a candy bar?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, if you're going to have a candy bar or you're going to drink a Mountain Dew, your sugars are probably going to go up and they're going to come straight back down.
By the way, we're talking about Mountain Dew a lot here, just so we're on the same page. But that's what I think of every time is like, oh, are you drinking a gin? And I think a lot of companies too, by the way, I'm sorry to interrupt
you,
Susan,
you're fine.
But I think a lot of companies are realizing like they're looking for sugar-free and alternatives when it comes to it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's sugar free.
Right. There's right? A lot of those things have sugar alcohols in it that can act very similarly or, you know, even drop a patient's blood sugars. You know, like if I have a lot of patients that can't do a Diet Coke for a mid-afternoon pick me up because they tend to go hypoglycemic.
Oh, man.
So that can be an issue as well. But eating something like an apple, which has fiber in it, will help you control that sugar a little bit better.
Let's get to the text club real quick because we only have a little bit of time. We could have done 4 hours on diabetes today, by the way, I think. This person says, I was diagnosed in June with type 2. With medications and dietary changes, I was able to bring my A1C from 10.1 down to 5.5 in 3 months. My issue is that I have neuropathy in my limbs due to contracting Guillain-Barré syndrome back in 2003. That neuropathy has been severely exacerbated since the diabetes onset. I have been taking gabapentin for years, but it doesn't help as much as I thought it would. Any suggestions?
Boy, that's a tough one. Having a hemoglobin A1C, that's your 3 month sugar, which what would put you at what, Susan, about 250, 300?
The A1C. 10, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's horribly controlled diabetes. So if you come into the situation with a hemoglobin A1C of greater than 10, your neuropathy pain is going to be significant, whether or not you had Guillain-Barré before or not. My hope is if that patient continues to keep their hemoglobin A1C less than 5.5, that neuropathy should improve. I mean, I've had patients who've come in horribly controlled on their diabetes, drop their blood sugar significantly, and they feel their neuropathy gets so much better. So the Guillain-Barré throws a little curveball into this patient, unfortunately, and the fact that they've been on gabapentin, which is a nerve pain medication for so long that it's not benefiting. But I would hope that that patient keeps up with their diabetic care and maybe that neuropathy gets better, because the nerve repairs itself at about a centimeter a month. So
that's a long ways.
It takes a while for nerves to heal.
Another text. I was just diagnosed with PCOS. How common is it to get diabetes with this?
Well, I see PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome quite a bit in my practice, and it is part of that metabolic syndrome, and you are at risk for developing type 2 diabetes. So I am very aggressive with my polycystic patients. We talk a lot about diet. We talk a lot about exercise. We use medications to help control some of the issues related to it, whether it's cycles and, hair growth or their weight. So it's very important that we address that. And it's very overlooked. 1 in 7 women have polycystic. So it's more prevalent than we think, and one of the top hormonal issues for females.
Let's go over to the phone lines now. Holly has been very patient on the phones. Holly, welcome to the IMA Doctor Show on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 FM, KFGO.
Hi, thanks for getting me on. I just wanted to give you some information as far as positivity, as far as being a type 1 diabetic. I will be celebrating 50 years of diabetes management for myself this spring. So I have been a type 1 diabetic for 50 years and have gone through the whole gamut of taking shots 4 times a day and testing and blood glucose monitoring. And I am now currently on a insulin pump and a CGM. And I also just got my my booster shot just recently. So I feel like I'm in tip-top condition. I was not diagnosed. I was young when I was diagnosed. I was 19 years old in college, my sophomore year of college, and I was not, quote, fat. So, again, it's just one of those things, especially for type 1 diabetics, that, yes, it is truly a life sentence, but you can live healthily, and for the most part, I guess the word healthy is correct, but also for the most part, yes, there are times when you can cheat too. But just wanted to let you know that.
Holly, 50 years, a lot's changed 50 in 50 years, huh?
Totally, totally, like night and day, totally.
Well, thank
but
you very
so
much.
Positive.
Thank you for calling in and sharing that story with us. I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there who are nodding their heads and thinking about, yep, I'm looking forward to getting to 50 years too. So congratulations on keeping yourself healthy and living with that, Holly. I'm very impressed.
All right. Well, thank you for having me on. Take care.
As we get close to wrapping up this conversation about diabetes, let's talk about what you're doing at IMA these days. So it sounds like you're having plenty of patients who are coming in and saying something's not right, and finding out that maybe they haven't been taking care of their diabetes the way that they should have. Is there ever a it's just too late to say, like, nope, I haven't been paying attention the last couple of years, so I'm just going to continue not paying attention?
I don't think it's ever too late. I think I can tell you and give you all the tools that you want to. If you're interested and you want to make this better, I will do whatever it takes to make that happen. I think that's part of the reason that people come to our clinic in the first place, is we're willing to go above and beyond. But we can help you do whatever you want to. If you want to ignore it, then that's on you. But we have so many tools at our disposal these days. There's so many new medications available for type 2 diabetics, just a whole arsenal of things. So we can make it better if you're interested.
And Dr. Hella, I think it used to be that if you were diagnosed with diabetes, you thought, like, oh, I'm going to be, absolutely chained down to insulin and having to worry about these things. But with the breakthroughs that we've had, everything from constant monitoring, glucose pumps. I mean, we're just talking about your Apple Watch is, looking out for you these days. I mean, it's a much different game today than it was.
And it's exciting. And we've had a couple clinical trials with these new diabetic medications. Some of them are like a once a week injection. There's some new oral medications out there. Ozempic, which is a commercially available once a week injection, has been fantastic for both weight loss and for diabetes. It's almost a game changer. And there'll be more and more medications like that coming out, to the point where it used to be diagnosed with diabetes, put on a sulfa medication, which are really old, gain some weight, get older, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're on insulin. And then once you're quote on insulin, you're always on insulin. Nope, we've got new stuff out there now that we can at least push off diabetes for years if you know the patient's willing to put a little bit of effort into it, listen to us, listen to our dietitian, and just make a few little changes in the life. It's fun to watch people really grow, and oftentimes it's not. They have to have a complete overhaul. It's one or two things in their life, diet, exercise, that is really affecting them poorly, like their pop or their milk or alcohol or something. That just one little thing that needs to be adjusted, and boom, they're way better off.
Well, if this sounds like something you want more information on, I'm going to tell you about IMA Healthcare. IMA Healthcare is focused on whole person preventative and specialized medical care. Instead of simply treating a symptom, they'll work to find the source of that symptom and what it means to your overall health. IMA Healthcare is a patient-centered healthcare facility. You can find them online at imahealthcare.com. You can give them a telephone call at 701-280-2033. Located on 45th Street and 32nd Avenue, right here in Fargo, across from the Mexican Village. Dr. Brent Hella, Susan Hansen, thank you both for being in here today. Very educational. This will be podcast at kfgo.com and consumable wherever the podcast you love is available.